Session number 8634.
General Yungareel 3.
So, soon after dawn, on the second day, we moved out, and I had selected a wood. I suppose it would be about a couple of miles inland, or maybe a bit more, maybe 3 or 4 miles, I've forgotten now. And we slowly trundled there. When we got there, we found that it was really a very suitable place because it had a sunken road in the middle of it, and off that sunken road there were a lot of dugouts that had obviously been constructed by the Germans. It had been some form of command post that had now evacuated. So this was very useful for us because it gave us protection, and I located the troops, the four troops, in a sort of defensive square around this piece of wood, and the headquarters in the middle of it. We found also that just beyond the wood, in the direction of the sea, there were a large number, I forget how many now, but probably 60 or 80, big rockets, German rockets, bulbous things with a long tail, aimed at our beach. And they had not gone off, and you could see straight away the reason why, because there was a wire connecting them to one of the dugouts in this sunken road, and the wire had been shattered by a shell, by a bomb, probably. There was a big bomb crater, and the wire had been cut in half. So our luck had been in that day, because if that lot had gone off, it would have really been the end of just about everybody on the beach. Well, we settled down, and I think I went again to the brigade headquarters to see whether any orders for me. And I did get an order, which was to go and have a look at a radar station which had been set up by the Germans near a place called Douvres, Douvres. Actually, its full name is Douvres-la-Deliverande. So I went along there. I got a map reference. I suppose I took my tank. I don't remember. I must have done. I had no other vehicles. And started to take a look at this. It was obviously a defensive area. I think it was marked on the maps we had. We had maps which had been overprinted with the German defences, and I think we already knew this was happening. But anyway, this thing is still holding out. There were some Marine commandos there on the sort of northern perimeter of it. And I talked to the CO of the battalion, and he said that we must attack this thing, and that when could we do this? When could we come and help them? And I asked him what his plan was, which was to just go in from the north where he was. I think I walked all the way around this. It took quite a long time. It was quite an extensive area, and it seemed to me that it would be far better to attack from the south, because the defences were all, and the pillboxes and things that they had, were all seemed to be sighted so as to deal with an attack from the north. So I went back and talked to this man again. And he said, well, he'd think about this, I think, and we rather left it like that. By then, I was really having quite a lot of trouble with my hearing, and my ears were painful. So I went back and told Dickie Bowes that he must act as OC of the squadron, because I had to go to the beach and see a doctor. I had met a doctor on the beach on D-Day, and he had put some sulfanilamide powder in my ear, in my ears. One was worse than the other, and put a sort of first aid bandage round it. Anyway, I went to the beach and found a doctor, was another doctor, and he started sort of peering to my ears, and he said, "My God, you oughtn't to be here, you should have gone back." So I then went back to the squadron and said, "Look here, I'm going to have to go back." I realized then that it really wasn't possible to go on. And handed over really to Dickie Bowes, and then just took the small kit I had and went back to the beach, where I was told to go on to a landing craft which was taking casualties back. And so that was the end of my quite short stay on the beaches of Normandy, on the bridgehead of Normandy.
Were the crossings either way totally unchallenged? The crossings of the Channel? As far as you were concerned?
As far as we were concerned, yes. Although when I got back to hospital in Portsmouth, I found myself in a bed next to a sailor whose boat had been sunk by, I think he said, a German fast patrol boat, which had torpedoed their boat, and he'd been wounded. So there was some opposition, but they didn't affect us.
At what stage did you rejoin the campaign in Northwest Europe?
I think it was the 1st of November. I was in hospital for, I suppose, some weeks, and my ears gradually got better. And then I went to a training camp run by our brigade. For a couple of months or so, I ran one of the training squadrons there until, by chance, the command of 2-6 Squadron became vacant again, because the man who'd taken over from me, who was a chap called... it'll come to me in a minute. Was being taken from 2-6 Squadron to be brigade major to Ginger Watkinson in the brigade, and so the squadron became the previous brigade major became a casualty, and so command of 2-6 Squadron was vacant again, and I could go back there. I should perhaps add that as a result of the casualties that we suffered on D-Day, and I'm not just my own squadron, but all the assault regiments, and there was one, all the assault squadrons, and there was one to each brigade that landed. We had to reduce our, we lived on our fat, we had to reduce our strength from 4 troops per squadron down to 3 troops per squadron. So the squadrons, when I rejoined in November, right up by the Scheldt estuary, the squadrons were that much smaller.
Were mines a problem?
Yes, there were mines all over the place. And apart from the mines I've been talking about, the telemines, which incidentally had been tied onto the obstacles, which was something we had not expected, and they sank one or two of the landing craft because of this. But also in the approaches behind the beach, there were masses of telemines. Also, there was a new mine that we'd never seen before called an R mine. And I remember that in our regimental headquarters, the man who was acting commanding officer, our commanding officer, incidentally, whose name was I forget my own name. I'll think of that in a minute. Had been killed, landing with one of the other squadrons on the 3rd British Air Front. The acting commanding officer, who was a second in command, he told his intelligence officer to dismantle one of his iron mines to see what made it tick. And of course there was a booby trap of sorts in it. And this wretched young man was killed doing this, together with a sergeant major and I think a clerk. Sorry, I forgot the name of the man who took over for me in 2-6 Squadron. His name was Waters, Chris Waters.